It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum Number 52 from downtown Sydney, and you will probably hear the faint hum in the background of the traffic. It is a privilege again to come and reflect on news throughout the world with you, and it's a privilege to get to meet different people. I've just come from a meeting where I met a young man, and he and his father listened to this on a Saturday. Now, I apologize that this is probably, you're not going to be able to do it this Saturday, unless we manage to get it out. I've not been all that well, and you'll hear that my voice is a wee bit croaky. Nothing serious, just a cold in the middle of the Australian winter, which is really like the Scottish summer. But let's go to the news, and let's go to the new British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson.
Statement, the Prime Minister.
Here he is speaking at his first Prime Minister's statement in the House of Commons.
And I think there's also far too much negativity by the potential of our great country. I think you will agree, Mr. Speaker, because our constitutional settlement, our United Kingdom, will be firm and will be secure. Our union of nations beyond question. Our democracy robust. Our future clean, green, prosperous, united, confident, and ambitious. And that is the prize, and that is our responsibility in this House of Commons to fulfil. And to do so, we must take some immediate steps. And the first is to restore trust in our democracy and fulfil the repeated promises of Parliament to the people by coming out of the European Union and doing so on October the 31st.
Now, he's had a surprisingly good start. What are we to say about this? There are people who are, as he puts it, skeptics and doubters. He does come across as very optimistic, but you know, optimism doesn't put food on the table. He's certainly very different. I don't know. I struggle with the hysteria of people who are opposed to him. I don't think he is, as the Daily Telegraph put it, the one, and I've written a blog about that that you can see on the Weefly blog, but the hysteria around him is really quite extraordinary. So this is a right-wing coup. This is an alt-right government, which is really quite bizarre given that he's got three people from an immigrant background who are in the top four jobs. There are people like Nish Kumar tweeting the comedian, "This new cabinet is basically the suicide squad. Now we know what it's like to live in a dictatorship." These are all intelligent people. This is not a dictatorship. This is the leader of the Conservative Party, the largest party in Parliament, becoming the Prime Minister, which is how a parliamentary democracy works. Well, we need to pray for Boris Johnson, and we need to pray for the leaders in our culture. I do find some of his appointments, though, fascinating. Let me just mention two of them. One of them that's been spoken of a lot is that of Dominic Cumming. Now, Dominic Cumming was the inspiration. Dominic Cumming is brilliant in the sense of intellectually and tactically and strategically. And he was the guy who ran the Vote Leave campaign. Now, the fact that he's been called in as an advisor, I think that is absolutely key. And I tell you what it tells me more than anything. I think that Boris Johnson is preparing for an election in October, November. It really would not surprise me if that happened. And it also tells me that despite many people's fears, he's totally serious about Brexit. Because if Brexit doesn't happen, I think Boris Johnson will be finished. And it looks to me as though he recognizes that. The other is the appointment of Jacob Rees-Mogg to be leader of the House of Commons. Now, why is that significant? Well, I think it's a brilliant appointment for lots of reasons. I think Rees-Mogg himself is a very committed Catholic, and he would hold to the Catholic teaching on abortion, and he would do so publicly. There are people who hate Rees-Mogg, there are people who mock Rees-Mogg, but you watch his performance in the House of Commons, and it really is quite remarkable. I find it very encouraging that Rees-Mogg is in that position. So we shall see what happens, but we are certainly in for far more interesting times than under Theresa May. Now, one of the things that gets said is, you know, this is the alt-right, this is fascism, and I'm just getting tired of this. Everything that someone doesn't like, it's the return of fascism. Usually said by people who don't know what fascism is. Now, one such instance of this, although I have to say Alistair Campbell does know what fascism was Alistair Campbell, the former spin doctor for Tony Blair, who's been down in Australia, and he appeared on Q&A. And this is what he said about Donald Trump.
So, you know, that thing he did the other day with the Congress, the four congresswomen of colour, Hitler was doing that stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to go out and kill 6 million people. I'm saying the seeds of fascism are being sown. And if we're not careful, we end up in a very dark and dangerous place.
Nick Cader, do you think the same?
I just think that is so over the top and so wrong. And the conditions are the same as the 1930s. No, they're not. Anyone who knows about the 1930s knows that Germany had been defeated in the First World War, had been humiliated. There had been a recession way beyond anything that we had known. There was a large left-wing communist group within Germany. There was the collapse of the Christian church. There are so many different things. And there are parallels, but you can find parallels almost in anything. And I do think that calling Donald Trump the equivalent of Hitler or Boris Johnson or whatever is really, it doesn't help. In fact, the only people it really does help are the real far right. Because then an awful lot of ordinary people will say, well, if you're saying that opinion is far right, maybe that's what I am. But it's not. And I think the idea of Alistair Campbell, who is accusing Boris Johnson of being a liar, we have to remember that Alistair Campbell is the person who invented the whole spin doctoring thing. And he's the one who encouraged Tony Blair in the lies that we heard about the Iraq war. He said in the course of that discussion, by the way, what can you say? What can you not say? Well, there are many things we can't say. I mean, Alistair Campbell himself had said to a journalist, we don't do God. And I do find there are many people who are restricted very much in what they feel that they can say. Now, in that regard, if you want proof of that, I heard Jonathan Haidt speaking in Sydney University yesterday. It was totally remarkable. And I'm going to write up some stuff about that. But he was pointing at things you cannot say. And one of the things he gave an example to answer Alistair Campbell's question was, in an elite American university, if you are or have ever been opposed to same-sex marriage, you're out. You're going to be done. There are plenty of things you can't say. Alistair Campbell seems to me to live in a very, very confused world. Let's move on and let's look at one of the great stories.
I'm going to step off the limb now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One of the most fascinating things about that is that we find that many of the astronauts, despite, was it Yuri Gagarin who said he went to the moon and he didn't see God? Many of the astronauts profess faith in Jesus Christ. And there was a BBC program about that, talking about spirituality amongst those who went to the moon. It was a fascinating program. And not least, this bit about communion on the moon.
Just after landing on the moon and before Neil Armstrong took that first small step for man, Buzz took Holy Communion. At the time, this wasn't known to the world, as NASA management was nervous following the Apollo 8 crew's reading of Genesis on Christmas Eve the year before, as church historian Pat Brackett recalls.
Madeline Murray O'Hare, who was an atheist, sued the government for allowing the reading of Genesis on a state national project. Well, NASA said to Buzz, okay, you can continue with your idea of the communion, but keep it quiet.
Since that discreet communion on the moon, Webster Presbyterian has been holding an annual lunar communion. Here's Pastor Dr. Keith Uffman.
What I think that the lunar communion itself does is...
Buzz Aldrin, an elder in the Presbyterian Church in America, actually took communion on the moon. Now, what I found fascinating in the program was it was okay for him to do it, but he had to keep it quiet because some atheist in America had sued NASA for the Bible being quoted. I guess we've always had these kind of fundamentalist atheists who are manic about these kind of things. But I thought it was fascinating that Aldred was such a committed Christian and that he took communion on the moon and that there were people who went and that experience of going to the moon drew them closer to God rather than further away. Okay, let's move on. Here's a story that you may not have heard about. It's to do with the England footballer Gary Lineker, who's now a BBC TV presenter. And he's to be made a fellow of an Oxford college. I think it's Lady Margaret Hall. Now, what is interesting about that is, what has he done to deserve it? Is it any particular academic brilliance? Is it the particular insights that he has to offer? Or is it just the fact that he's a celebrity who fits, inverted commas, with the values of Oxford? He's very strongly pro-Remain. He's considered a celebrity, media personality in that. Although he's into equality and diversity, and here's the fascinating thing. He gets a salary of £1.75 million. Now, it's become a bit of a scandal with the BBC that some of their female staff are paid less. Is Mr. Lineker willing to give up some of his salary to have equality? Because I don't think he believes in equality of pay amongst BBC staff. But I think what intrigues me more is just how accepted you can be once you're in a certain elite and you hold to certain views, and how excluded you are if you hold others. Well, I wish Mr. Lineker well. But do you know this? I just think from a Christian perspective, I'm really glad we don't do the celebrity stuff. I know that sometimes we copy the world and we do it, but it's just wrong. We follow Jesus Christ. And in my eyes, every Christian is of equal value. You know, it's only Christianity that really does real equality and diversity. Let's move on to another couple of stories, this time from Switzerland. Let's go to Switzerland, where actually my boss at City Bible Forum is at the moment. If you've ever been to Geneva, you'll see the famous statues of the reformers, including Knox and Calvin and Luther. And it's a massive monument. And I feel quite sad that it has been defaced. It's been defaced. I think this has happened before. What we're finding is that there is a militancy amongst some atheists and LGBT activists attacking any Christian symbol. I found that quite sad. But in Switzerland also, this is for me an amazing piece of news. The oldest Christian letter outside of the Bible was revealed. The University of Basel in Switzerland has got a papyrus that dates back to the 3rd century, to the 230s. It's a letter written by a young man named Arianus, addressed to his brother Paulus. And it finishes with, "I pray that you may fare well in the Lord." I love the historicity of Christianity. I love the fact that there are Christians today all over the world. But we can go back through many different countries and many different eras. And here we have a letter from the 3rd century where Christianity was really just beginning to take off. But let's come back to the reality of the modern day. Now, listen to this clip from Children's BBC.
The injection is called a hormone blocker, and if you stop taking it, your hormones start working again, just like before. Dr. Polly knows all about it.
The blocker is an injection that someone has every month, which pauses the body and stops it from carrying on to grow up into a man or a woman. And the idea of the blocker is that if we can take away that worry about your body doing something that you don't want it to, then it gives you and us more time and space to be really thinking about what's going to be best for you now, but also in the future. And the good thing about it is that if you stop the injections, it's like pressing a start button, and the body just carries on developing as it would if you hadn't have taken the injection.
That is the BBC indoctrinating children into a social experiment with news that is false. The puberty blocker, it is not just like putting pause on a song on your iPhone or whatever you've got and then starting it up again. It affects the body, and there is a lot of dispute about how long-term those effects are. But here we have the BBC putting these programs directly into our homes, indoctrinating our children into queer theory. And this is getting just completely mad. So there's an article I've linked to on Spiked Online where there's a Brazilian woman in Canada who has refused to give a waxing in the genital area to a man who says that he's a woman, and he's suing her, and he's actually put her out of business. He's put her out of business because she's refusing to touch his genitals. That's the sickness of the culture that we are in. And that sickness is seen in other ways. So in the United States, Elizabeth Warren, who's a politician there, as many of you will know, on her Twitter feed, she has put her pronouns. What does she want to be known as? She, her. And apparently this is what you do with your Twitter feed. I would inform you I wish to be referred to as he, him. It's such a nonsense. I remember I got into a spat with the director of education in Dundee. And he was a man who said that he wasn't a man. But when I said, do you want to be referred to as she? He said no, and wanted the term, was it ze or zer or they or whatever. And I said, look, I'll call you whatever you want. But if you're going to play this identity game, then I want you to call me by my chosen pronoun, and you can make up whatever pronoun you want. So I just simply said, I'm a Christian, so every time you speak of me, just use the term beloved in Christ. But I'll let you off. I'll let you use beloved in short. I never heard from him again. I don't know. There's a collective madness. I mean, Jonathan Haidt, again, when he was speaking, he was talking about the collective madness that's gripped the elites in the United States. And I pray to God it doesn't happen in Australia, and I pray that insofar as it has happened in the United Kingdom, which it has, that now gets reversed. But let's move on and let's talk about someone else who the elites absolutely love, and that is Yuval Noah Harari. Now, he is well listened to in Silicon Valley. He's written books, Sapiens and Homo Deus. I've read them both. They are being hailed as works of great influence and genius. I think they're interesting. I think they're well written. And I think they are profoundly depressing. I don't agree with his history. I don't agree with his anthropology. I don't agree with many of the things that he's saying. Profoundly, profoundly bleak view of the world. Well, he's just written a book called 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. And here is what this prophet of this age says about something that he did, because he has different versions for America and for Russia.
It's not that I wanted to curry favor with the Russian regime so they would invite me to whatever. It's just I was giving a very stark choice. Either you change these few examples, or you don't publish in Russia. What do you do? I don't support censorship. I speak very, very clearly about this in my books, in my lectures. But I don't choose in which world I'm living. We are living in a world in which a large part of the world is under non-democratic regimes that do have censorship. And one option is just, okay, so we don't publish there at all, and we are leaving them out of the conversation. Another option is that in advance, we refrain from criticizing these regimes because we want to publish exactly the same books in Russia and the US. You know, it's a choice between options. None of them is good.
Let me ask you about another example.
What's going on here?
In the war chapter.
In one sense, what he's done makes a lot of sense. It means he gets his book published in Russian. He's just giving different examples. But I think there's something profoundly wrong here. And what's profoundly wrong is that you're tailoring your message to suit the dominant culture of the people that you're trying to reach. I think it's fundamentally dishonest. I do think, however, maybe something we can take from him, and that is, this would be my quote of the week. No one knows what the future will look like. Humans like to tell themselves stories, be they in the form of religion or political ideologies, such as nationalism, communism, and liberalism. But none of these can adequately prepare us for what may happen in the next 50 years. New technology and climate change might make the world more different than we can possibly imagine. So we had better keep an open mind and hope for the best. That's it. That is the hope that the world can offer. Let's keep an open mind and hope for the best. What's the Christian version of that? Let's keep an open mind. Let's investigate. Let's explore. Let's not think that we know the future, but let's hope for Christ. Let's hope for Christ's return. Let's recognize that God is sovereign. Let's recognize that with the things that we've looked at in this podcast, that the Lord has a great deal to say to us. It's not Boris Johnson. The Australian newspaper said it's Boris's Britain. No, it's not Boris's Britain. Everything belongs to Christ. Or you think of Putin, or you think of Trump, or you think of the gender controversy, or you think of the going to the moon, or you think of what's going on in universities. You think of all the different things. In fact, you may be listening to this and you're thinking of things in your own life. Well, just remember, if you are a Christian, I know who holds the future. I don't know exactly what the future will hold, but I know who holds the future. And that's where our hope is. You know, we say quantum of hope. We look at all the different things. And people like Harari are fascinating. People like Jonathan Haidt are fascinating. I think Haidt's analysis of the culture is generally spot on. But his solutions, like Harari's solutions, keep an open mind and hope for the best. It's not much of a hope. But a hope that's based on Jesus Christ is a real hope. And one person who's found that is the person we're going to go out with, and that is Alice Cooper. We're going to finish with a song, the riff of which is so well known to so many people. But I got a bit of a shock because there's a minister from Scotland called Alistair Begg who's in the United States in Parkside Church. I've preached at his church. He's a tremendous preacher, a tremendously faithful pastor of God's Word. And you do well to go and listen to his sermons and things online. Truth for Life is what his podcast is called. And he really is very influential. But I heard that Alice Cooper was at his church, and Alice Cooper was speaking at his church. And I'd known that Alice Cooper was somebody who had professed faith in Christ. But, you know, I'm never very sure about these celebrities who become Christians and whether we jump into it far too quickly. But you listen to Cooper and his testimony seems so real. And I'm very, very encouraged by it, that someone like Alice Cooper, who was known for his kind of goth horror type stuff, and a quite, I mean, I liked the music, but I think part of it was quite destructive. For him to have found hope in Christ is a wonderful thing. So we'll leave you with that. Please again, do forgive my voice and the background noise. If you've got anything you want to inform me about, please do so. Hopefully my voice will recover by next week. If you want to support, then just go to the Podbean fundraiser and you can pledge something there. So God bless you, and this does give me an excuse. It's the school holidays, so it gives us an excuse to play out with Mr. Cooper. See you next week. Bye.